and they get to choose their prize out of all of that. It's not random. They know what each prize is and they choose. And we were like, surely they're going to choose the flights because that's what I would choose. No, he chose the company tattoo. And so my husband and I are like, we don't even have one. Like, it was a total joke. And now we do. Now we all have company tattoos because he chose it. And we're back. It's a different episode for you, but the same day for us.
We are back. Yeah, we're that's back. Why. Look, I didn't.
That's
I didn't
why we. Even like, I know. I don't wear the same clothes every day.
I don't either. I've been wearing this T-shirt nonstop for 2 weeks now.
Yeah. Well, it's actually not that far off,
though. That's true too. I do tend to. I mean, I dress like a 12-year-old, but hey, I've been consistently dressing like a 12-year-old for over 50 years now. So I, you know,
no need to stop now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say all my life, anyway. But. If I add 50 years to 12, that's my current age.
Welcome back to Behind the Science. We are on part two of a very exciting topic. This is HR. Again, if you didn't see the first part, go back and watch part one. Super helpful, very good information. This is part two of HR. And if you are a small business owner, sign industry is not necessary. If you're a small business owner in any industry, this is probably very helpful. We typically talk about the sign industry here, but small business, 5 to 50 employees. If you have questions about HR, this is kind of going to talk you through a little bit more information that we didn't get to in part one. So,
I just want to say how grateful I am to Videlcia Garcia. I mean, to have somebody that understands this issue so thoroughly to spend this much time with us to help us and help our community and our sign shops. I'm super grateful to her. So you guys, if you've already watched the first episode, you get a feel for her passion for the subject. So, without further ado, we'll just drop into that. But before we do, I just want to take a minute to thank our friends and our sponsors because we could not do it without them. We also couldn't do it without the community. I mean, we love the behind the scenes.
I mean,
community.
We could do it, but we wouldn't.
Well, it would just go into nowhere, Bill. So,
right. I mean, and we wouldn't do that.
No. So, but before we get started, let's just say a quick thank you to our sponsors at Inktavo. Of course, as you know, they bring us great production management software, primarily SignTracker, Printavo, and ClarityGo. So if you go to Inktavo.com, you can learn about those products. And SignTracker, of course, is here US-based, and ClarityGo is based in the UK. So if you're one of our UK friends, they have great production management software and a great team of support people. And then, of course, Printavo, if you're in the garment and print world, is another amazing production management software. So you can learn all about these if you go to inktavo.com. And then, of course, our very special relationship. I'm taking it this time.
You do it.
Our very special relationship with Sign Builder Illustrated Magazine. Read your trade magazines. It's super important. You learn a lot. But we, Liz and I, have a column in the magazine.
What's it called, Joe?
Behind the Signs, of course. And it's usually business development and leadership articles. So hopefully they're helpful to you folks. We always get nice feedback from those. So I'm assuming we're doing something right. I don't know. But if you go to signshop.com, you can sign up for a subscription to the magazine. It's free, whether you get it in print. The digital version is also amazing, too. A little easier. It comes into your email box. And then last but not least, we want to thank...
Definitely not least. We just got back probably by now. I'm taking
by
this
now.
One. By now we're back, hopefully.
We're back.
Yeah. Looking very tan.
Woo. Florida. Yeah. Orlando.
We should be back now from ISA Expo 2026. It was in Orlando, Florida this year. If we didn't meet you there, we're sorry we missed you. Hopefully we'll see you next year.
Yes.
It's never too early to start planning to go to your expo. We're huge proponents for joining your local sign organization, sign
association.
That's the
word. Association. Wow.
My brain is broken today. It's just broken. Join your local sign association. For us, that's Texas Sign Association and, of course, International Sign Association. Though there are so many, if you go to ISA.com, If you go to science.org, lordy. If you go to science.org, you can see the list of all the sign associations and pick your local one and you can join, be a member. Highly, highly recommend.
So important.
So necessary. Yes. Yeah. So. Anyway, without further ado, let's jump into this part two.
Part two.
HR 102 or part two, however you want to talk about.
That kind of does get us into the next question is liability, right? So in the sign industry, a lot of times employees are going out from the shop onto job sites or, you know, traveling. Sometimes they're using their personal car. Sometimes they're going to conferences. You know, there's a lot of travel that happens in the sign industry. What's the liability there? So if I was going to a job site or a trade show that was required, that required, you know, being gone a couple of nights and maybe they got hurt and it was after hours, but it was still while they were traveling for work, maybe some of those scenarios, what liability does the company have?
So what I would recommend, if you're not sure about your level of liability, I would recommend to always document what is happening. So if an employee calls you and tells you, Joe, I'm in the hotel right now. I finished the conference and I was walking and I fell and I feel pain. The worst thing you can do is tell the employee, oh, it's not my responsibility. It was after hours. It's not my job. The person who is in charge of doing that is your insurance. So you're going to collect all the information and you're going to submit it to insurance. And then the insurance is going to determine if this is a valid workers' compensation claim or not. There are times where it's not. Even if the employee, for example, is driving using their personal car for work purposes, sometimes, even though the person is working, so you will say this is compensation, sometimes it's actually a motor vehicle claim. So you have to make sure it's labeled correctly, but it's not your job to label it. So you just have to collect the information, make sure you have all the information related to the accident, then submit it to the insurance, and the insurance is going to be the one to determine, yes, this is workers' compensation, or this is a motor vehicle accident, or this is something that has to be submitted to the building insurance or to the hotel insurance. So that's something that I would suggest to stay away from labeling the situation, just collect the information and then submit it for review.
And that raises such a good point, Vidalcia. So here in Texas, the requirement for workers' comp is 10 employees or more. But I do want to state that just because you're not required to have it doesn't mean you shouldn't have it. It is well worth the investment to have workers' compensation. Not that you ever want to think your employees will get hurt on or off a job site during work travel or not, but it's always good to have it just in case that happens.
Well, especially in our industry, right? You're talking about working around routers and paint booths and, you know, very technical equipment and then crane trucks and, or even being up on ladders, installing vinyl on a window, whatever. I think you should have it. And the other thing I think to be careful about, and Vidalcia, if you have any opinion on this, is true too, because I've made this mistake. But when I made all the mistakes, I just want to
say, what I like about it is that you're mindful, that you're aware that you made those mistakes, which is beautiful. Well,
I'd like to say, Vidalcia, that I learned from my mistakes, but it's generally, I'm a strike one, strike two, strike three guy. Then I finally learn. So it takes me a few times. But, you know, somebody gets hurt on the job. Oh, well, we won't file an insurance claim. We'll just take care of this ourselves. You know, but then all of a sudden you find yourself in this. That's not a good idea. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, we did it and probably shouldn't have. But.
No, that's not a good practice at all. You know, that's why you pay insurance. So you had to go ahead and file an insurance claim. Sometimes, like I've seen, for example, people get hurt and it's just my finger and they put a Band-Aid and go home and all of a sudden the finger is broken. And then the person ends up going to the hospital and you don't want to go back to the insurance. Oh, you know, 3 months ago, this happened. Then that looks really bad. So yes, if anything that happens, you have to report it to the insurance. And yes, I get it that sometimes you can be concerned about your insurance going up, but the consequences of all this, of hiding something and then getting to a bigger issue, they're a lot worse. So it's better just to be upfront. And anytime you see someone getting hurt or you get a report, you have to make sure you report it to the insurance.
Let's talk about documenting situations to get us there. So we had this one guy, for example, that was working for us. And he was really such a good kid, but he was a project manager and that would not document things correctly on a project And so it cost us, you know, first time it was a couple $100, second time it was $1,000 or whatever. The third time, one big one, the last one, I forget what it was, $10,000 or $15,000 that he approved something being done on a job, never got a change order approval from the client, disciplining and eventually firing an employee and doing it in a way that keeps you from getting sued. Because if you don't document along the way and you just fire someone, you're terrible at what you do, you're fired, then you're going to get sued. So what is the, you know, strike one, strike two, or whatever your policy might be, strike three, how do you manage all that?
So first I want to say something to make you feel a little bit better. And all those people, you know, it's okay. I remember the first time I fired someone, I couldn't eat for a week. I was just heartbroken. And I was thinking about that person and their kids and how the person's going to pay rent, how they're going to take care of their kids. So it's normal. And it's okay to have those feelings. If you are someone who is struggling with disciplinary action, think about it this way. You're thinking about it as kicking someone out of the door. Oh, I'm getting this person out of the door. And that's not what you're doing. What you're doing is giving this person an opportunity to improve. So disciplinary, that's the whole point of disciplinary action. We sit down, we talk about it, and we find a way to fix it. So that's the whole point. The last thing we want to end up in termination. We want to kind of have a wake-up call, a conversation in which we can both talk about it and find a solution to it. So that's disciplinary action. Disciplinary action is not kicking anybody out. Yes, it can lead to that. Nothing helps, but that's not the main point. So let's say the first thing I usually do is to have a conversation with the person and explain what is happening and what is expected. Sometimes it happens that people don't know what is expected and just do the way they think it is supposed to be done. So let's not assume that everybody knows everything, and let's start from the beginning, like baby steps, and explain how things should be done and what is expected. This is the expectation. Now it's clear, hopefully. And then if it happens again, then we move up to a more formal meeting. And at that point, we sit down and we do the first warning. And at that point, that warning is going to go to the employee's file and be there in case that things happen again. Also, when you come to that conversation, I want you to think of a solution. What resources do you have that can help this person? If someone that is making mistakes with Excel, well, let's find you an Excel course. If you're making mistakes with money, well, what can we do for you to learn how to count money and be more accurate? If you are making any mistake that you're making, let me use my resources to be able to help you and support you. And you also have to put, of course, some type of intention on your end as well. If nothing happens, then we move on to the second chance. At that point, we're going to kind of go over the same conversation, see why this keeps happening. And at the same time, we're going to talk about termination. If this doesn't get fixed, the next time we meet, we're going to move on to termination. So that is completely clear what is happening. Everything is being documented and the person knows the next one is the last one. Then when we get to termination, then we do it. Some states require to give a letter. For example, the state of New York requires to provide a letter to the employee stating the reason why the employee was terminated. So that's basically the process I follow. But I want everybody to feel like that. When you are doing disciplinary action, you're not kicking people out. You are giving that person an opportunity to improve. And once you change the mindset, everything looks different. And now you feel like, oh, you know, I'm actually helping someone. You know, I'm not actually doing anything bad or putting someone at risk or losing their job. I'm actually doing my part to be able to help this person.
Yeah, I think that what's helped me and the reason it doesn't, the last person I terminated, I got a little choked up because they had been with us for so long. But the other side of that is you've been with us for so long. I've given you so many opportunities, including a verbal warning, written warning, a professional improvement plan. Like we really tried to pull out for years this improvement that just at some point you have to say, okay, I'm being taken advantage of. I'm trying, but you're not. And that's not okay. So that's kind of where my mindset is like, I'm giving you now the opportunity to try. Somewhere else.
And that's why I tell employers too, you know, employee, it's like a relationship, like a romantic relationship, right? It doesn't have to work. It's not that the person is a bad employee. It's not that you are a bad employer. It's just, it's not a match. So the person is just doesn't fit into this organization, doesn't fit in the culture, doesn't fit the expectations. So maybe the person has to go out and find a better place where they can actually fit. And then you'll see this person doing well. I remember I told you, for example, the person that I had to fire the first time I fired someone, feeling very bad and not being able to eat, going home and not being able to sleep. And then years later, I went to a bakery and the person I fired was the bakery owner. And then I was like, you know what? Maybe she needed to be fired to kind of like go ahead and do her own business. And that's the way you have to see termination. There's opportunities everywhere. And sometimes people have to be kicked out to find those opportunities. And that's where termination is. Not everybody is supposed to fit in your organization. Some people are supposed to be in other places and you're just letting them go.
Well, and I think too, as an owner, I mean, you have to be passionate and caring about the individuals that work for you. But, you know, on the other hand, you're also responsible for a lot of employees, customer relations, you know, those sorts of things. And so, I mean, you have to kind of balance that, right? Like I can care about this one person, but if that one person is hurting the bigger picture, at some point you have to just.
Absolutely. And then would you recommend putting your termination policy, let's say like the steps, whatever the steps would be for termination, would you recommend doing that as a policy in your handbook?
Of course. Yeah. People should be aware of what is the process if expectations are not being met from day one. That's totally right.
So let's say you followed your process or didn't, either way, but you have to terminate an employee and it's either a happy time or a sad time, however you look at it. Then comes the fear. And I think the reason a lot of companies don't fire employees for a long time is because they don't know the process for unemployment. And I know that it can vary state to state, but just as a general question, can you help people understand the process for unemployment claims and like what are the potential impacts for a company if they don't win, right, the case for unemployment?
My experience is based in New York, New Jersey, California, Florida, and Texas. Those are the states that I have experience with. So again, like you mentioned, it can be different in other states, but the process for those states is basically the same. When a person is terminated, the person has to contact the Department of Labor, the Unemployment Department, and then they are asked a series of questions like how long the person worked for that organization, what else the name of the organization. They have to provide salary information and also reasons why the person was terminated. They kind of provide a statement of what happened. After the claim has been filed, then the the unemployment department sends a letter to the employer with the information the ex-employee provided, and the employer has the opportunity to review that information. If the information is correct, they don't have to do anything. If the information is not correct, then the employer has the opportunity to fill out the form and provide their kind of side of the story, right? And then send that information to the unemployment department. They have usually a timeline, so you have to make sure you send it before the timeline is over. And then after that, with that information, then the Department of Labor is going to make the decision if the claim is going to be approved or denied. What happens if a claim is denied? You can file the claim. You can actually go to court. If the decision is approved and you feel like this is not fair, this person was fired and I have valid reason to fire this person shouldn't be allowed to go to unemployment, you can go to court. And then at that point, of course, you will have to bring a lawyer and probably have expenses. So I would say it's not worth it to go through that just for unemployment. You know, there's a big chance that this person is going to collect unemployment just for a little bit and then go to work again and that's it. Then you mentioned about the consequences. You know, if you have multiple team members that leave the job and start collecting unemployment, how that affects the business. So unemployment rate is actually based on experience, which means that the unemployment rate is calculated based on how many claims you have. So of course, having too many claims can increase your unemployment rate. However, I have worked for many organizations with a lot of unemployment claims, very active and high turnovers, and had never seen the employment rate being increased. So it has to be a large, extremely large number of cases for the unemployment rate to go up. So if you have one or two, don't be concerned about that. The only time that I saw unemployment rates going up dramatically was during COVID. And as we know, COVID was very, very high when it comes to unemployment claims. So I wouldn't say, I don't think a small business owner should be concerned about unemployment rates going up. Usually, you know, just for 1 or 2, 3 employees, you have to have a large number of employees leaving and collecting unemployment for your rate to go up.
For clarification, for people that don't understand unemployment rate, I just kind of want to clarify, because you hear, oh, I have to pay unemployment, or someone's collecting unemployment. You assume that it's you paying that employee. But really, your unemployment rate is one of the taxes that you as an employer pay. I think the rates, at least in Texas, are 0.32% to 6.3% is that range. And your company gets rated based on your history of terminations and the length of time you've been paying into the unemployment system.
Exactly. Yes, that's correct. So that's a quarterly, I believe, it's a quarterly payment that the organization makes to the unemployment for unemployment. And even if you don't have people on unemployment, you're going to pay. So that's something that you're always paying. And you can have a little bank, creating a little bank. So when a claim comes, the money is going to come from that bank.
Yeah. So the percentage you're paying is based on your payroll. So for every quarter you're paying, let's say you were at the lowest rate, 0.32%. You're paying 0.32% of your total payroll to the unemployment office every single, well, they take the percentage from every payroll, but really you're paying it quarterly to that unemployment office. So when someone claims unemployment and it gets approved, what they're doing is they're taking from that bank that you've paid into, and you don't have to replenish, or your replenishment rate doesn't increase on that unemployment rate unless you've done this, like you're saying, many, many, many times, or there's a crazy pandemic that's causing everyone to get fired. So unemployment's extremely depleted.
I mean, at one point we had like 60 employees and we had a few unemployment claims. And if you document why a person was fired, generally you'll win. And then you can also within the, at least we were able to a few times when we didn't win, we could appeal it. We never did go as far as the hiring lawyer. That was just way too expensive. We didn't do that. But I don't recall us ever really being rated. I mean, we didn't have a ton of unemployment claims, but we never really get rated. Not that I remember.
And if you haven't had high turnover, I mean, in a termination capacity, people quitting is different. That's very different. But if you haven't had high turnover and you've been paying into the system for a few years, you likely are at the lowest possible rate anyway. So you're not going to see a huge.
Exactly. I wouldn't even think about it. Yeah.
But it's still worth documenting.
Yes, yes. That's when documenting comes very handy. That's right. That's when documenting comes very handy.
Okay, we don't want to end on a negative note because Joe doesn't
let's end it. Let's cheer it up a little. Yeah, let's end it with some happy employee stuff. One thing, you know, my company, Signtech, we were very, very famous for the...
Joe did it wrong.
I thought we were gone. Yeah.
You can see where this is going. We were known for our epic Christmas parties. And when I say epic, I'm talking like epic. And so generally we did, you know, every year we would do 2 or 3 different bars. We would do their signs, you know, so we would always pick one of them and we would do kind of a trade, you know, and we would go in there and, you know, we would host a big, huge party. And would have our vendors come out and would have, you know, of course, all our employees there. And there might have been a few cocktails or 10 and, or an open bar. There were things like that. I mean, and, you know, in retrospect, looking back, that probably wasn't a great idea. I'm very, very grateful that nothing bad ever happened. But what are some guidelines?
One time there was a fist fight at the bowling alley.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
I didn't. It was great.
There was a fist fight at the bowling alley. Yeah. Well, I think that all worked out okay though. Yeah. So, but yeah. So are there some guidelines for things like that? You know, holding, you know, having parties and celebrating. Well, obviously companies want to do that and they're all going to have a beer or two, but should there be some kind of guidelines around?
So in general, I cannot tell you like there's a federal law or there's a state law indicating what you can or you cannot do when it comes to a company party. On my end, I do not allow alcohol in company parties or premises. However, my husband is also HR, and I was talking to him about this 2 weeks ago, and he was like, what? All my parties had to have alcohol, and he does. All his parties, all his recognitions have alcohol, wine, and Moet, and this and that. He mentioned a bunch of brands that he's including on his employee recognition party, which is in about 2 weeks. I don't do the alcohol. And the reason why I don't allow alcohol is because it's hard to control what people do when they're drinking. You can even give employees like 2 tickets for 2 drinks, but there are employees that don't drink and they're going to start sharing their tickets. And then you're going to see those people that usually drink a little bit more than usual drinking a lot. Also, you have to think about liability. What if an employee goes home driving and drunk for alcohol that you provided? And that's a big liability issue. So I don't allow alcohol when celebrating for the company or allow alcohol in the office. That's a big no-no. But again, you know, there are other organizations. I think also the structure of the organization depends a lot on the structure of the organization. For example, my employees, I have very young employees. Some work environments are a little more informal, so it's more difficult to control. My husband's company, for example, they're hired, highly educated. They're people that have a lot of connections with the government and government officials. So they care about their appearance and how they're seen outside the organization. So they're going to make sure they don't drink too much and things like that. So it really depends on the culture of the organization. If you can kind of evaluate if it's safe or not to add alcohol. But in particular, on my end, I eliminate alcohol. I joined an organization. I was working as a contractor about 2 years ago. And usually for Christmas, they do a big party and alcohol on premises. They do party on site. It's a manufacturing company. And they bring alcohol. And I told them, no alcohol. It was the first time they didn't have alcohol. Everybody was looking at me like, why is she doing this? But I don't like having alcohol involved when it comes to work events. There's too many things that are difficult to control.
Yeah, no, that's true. And well, especially for us, like we would have clients and vendors, and I don't drink anymore, you know, but man, I definitely used up all my drink tickets in my younger age. And my problem more than anything was, I love you so much. It just would get
that fail. You already love people too much. Like alcohol didn't help. Yeah, we don't, you know, my husband and I that own the business, we don't drink anyway. So when we have company gatherings, we just say, we're not buying alcohol. If we're at a restaurant and the adults that work for us decide to buy a beverage, that's their decision on them, but we don't support it. And they all know that. So, and that's kind of how we just kind of maintain that. It's just, you know, level of professionalism. Now, professionalism is not really the right word, but liability. You just kind of toe that line. So then, on another happy note, instead of firing people, let's say you have employees that are doing great. Yay. How would you recommend people recognize excellence in employees? Like, let's say raises and bonuses. Are there any structures that you would recommend for this? Or is it kind of just a...
So my, I think when it comes to recognition, one thing that you have to understand is that recognition can be encouraging, but it can also be discouraging if you don't do it the right way, right? So let's say that you're recognizing an employee because you receive an email from a customer letting you know that he provided great customer service, went above and beyond, and he's happy and actually placing more orders because of this employee. And you're like, oh my God, this is great. And then you buy him a cake and you buy candles and then you do a presentation so everybody knows what happened. And then you post the employee on Facebook and Instagram. And it's a big recognition, right? But then you have other employees that are also going above and beyond. They just don't have a customer sending a message to highlight how great of an employee they are. And then at that point, they're going to feel discouraged because they know they're also working hard, but they're not being recognized as this person. So you have to make sure you're providing channels for everybody to be recognized the same way. So if you're taking customers' feedback, make sure you reach out to each and every customer, letting them know that you're accepting feedback. And that feedback is going to be used to recognize your employees. That way, everyone gets an equal chance to be recognized, right? Also, if you have employees who don't have like face-to-face contact with the customers, then you have to provide some type of weight for them to be recognized as well. So one of my rules is if you cannot do something for everybody, then don't do it for anybody. So if you're going to do recognition, you have to make sure you're providing equal opportunity for everyone to be recognized the same way. And then you can go ahead and do it. Also, recognition has to be constant. You can, the month of May, we're doing recognition, but in April, we're not doing it because we were too busy. You have to make sure you do it. Even if you're busy, you have to keep going. So that way, employees know that it's something serious. So that way, employees know that the recognition is constant and that everyone has equal opportunity to be recognized. So that's the main rule for recognition. Now, how you recognize, it really depends on you. If you have the means to be able to provide monetary compensation, do so. If you have the means to take the team out, do so. If you don't have a way, because, you know, business is not that great and you don't have the money to be able to recognize that way, there are also other ways if you can recognize employees without actually spending a lot of money. So you can do that as well. Usually employees appreciate when you do, when you bring them all together and talk about how great this person is doing. Or maybe when you take a picture and post it on Instagram, that's also meaningful. And that's something that has no cost at all.
Yeah, I will say, so we do annual bonuses and that's based on their contributions for the year and the profits of the business. So it's kind of a double, how we calculate that is for our business, that's how we do it. But then we also have a Golden Zoe Award, and that's just like a fun award that we give out every year. And the hardest part is being consistent and doing it yearly. But those prizes are a little different. And for us, you know, we offer flights and we use our company points for that flight. That's one of the prizes, and that's like a round trip ticket somewhere that for us, it's Southwest. That's who we have points through. So anywhere Southwest flies, you get a round trip ticket, or you get two extra days of PTO, or you get, I think one other prize was custom vans that have the company logo on them or something. And then one year we gave someone all those options. And then we were like, oh, just rodeo clown, throw in a Studio Zoe tattoo. And they get to choose their prize out of all of that. It's not random. They know what each prize is and they choose. And we were like, surely they're going to choose the flights, because that's what I would choose.
Me too.
No, he chose the company tattoo. And so my husband and I are like, we don't even have one. Like, it was a total joke. And now we do. Now we all have company tattoos because he chose it. And we were like, well, we can't.
That's pretty hard.
That's
hard.
Commitment,
that's
right?
Hard.
Yeah.
And that's what he wanted. And he has it on his arm today. And what's so funny is all of our employees are jealous of that prize. And I'm like, guys, he had flights. He could have taken a flight. Southwest flies to Hawaii. Like, I don't understand.
Nice. But that shows how proud they feel of where they work. You know, not all employees will put the logo of the company they work for.
Some call it company culture. We just have.
You guys have nailed it in the culture.
Yeah. But that was to say, there are definitely creative ways to come up with prizes that aren't like the PTO is not really something that costs you a lot out of pocket. It's not something you'll notice on your cash flow, you know, and also if you have frequent flyer miles somewhere and you can use that as a prize. There are other ways to give people bonuses without it being a monetary bonus.
I remember working for an organization where we had a warehouse, so we had to buy a lot of supplies, and then the company we're buying their supplies from will give us gifts. And we will save those gifts. Probably sometimes we have like 25 different gifts, and we will give those gifts to the employees. And that's what wasn't costing anything at all. But that was something that employees appreciate a lot. So,
well, normally during this part of the interview, we have this thing called rapid fire questions, and it's always pretty funny stuff that's related to the sign industry. So yours are a little different since you're an HR consultant. So we thought we'd ask you this: out of, you know, all the, you know, different types of small businesses that you've worked with over the years, what is the absolute like craziest thing that you've seen an HR party foul.
So I have seen a lot. The craziest thing I have done, and it's funny because my cousin was actually involved in this. He was working for the organization I was working at, and I had to fire him. The craziest thing was that they created a baseball team inside a warehouse, and they were actually playing baseball inside the warehouse every day after 5 o'clock. Almost all the staff was leaving at 5 o'clock. They were the night shift, and at that time they would clear out the warehouse and start playing baseball. And my cousin was included on that. And then one day, someone had the great idea of recording the baseball game and upload it to social media, where a lot of people, including me, had access to. So everybody got fired. And like I said, my cousin was included as well. So it was a little bit challenging because of that.
Wow. Okay. I didn't see that coming, actually.
No, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Well, hopefully your cousin's still out there playing baseball with some little league and having fun or something. Yeah.
Dad, I feel like that's something you would have done.
Yeah, probably.
So, okay, the next one for our rapid fire questions is, what is the most important piece of advice you could give a small business owner concerning HR?
Yeah, so when it comes to HR, a lot of business owners feel like, when is the right moment to bring HR to my business? And I would say, if you have a small business that is growing, or you have a small business that you're planning to grow in the future, the moment to bring HR to the table is now. And when I say that, I don't mean that you need to hire an HR 8 hours. You're probably thinking like, it's only me. I opened 2 days ago. So why should I get an HR? So when I mean bringing HR to your business, I mean building a relationship with an HR professional. You don't want to start looking for an HR in the middle of a crisis. You got a letter from a lawyer telling you that someone is suing you for harassment, and you don't want to be like, oh, let me find an HR. No, we're not doing that. You are going to start building a relationship with an HR professional now. You can reach out to maybe an HR professional that you know. You can reach out to myself, or you can reach out to a human resource that you can find online, maybe going to the Society of Human Resources. And you can reach out to the human resources professional and say, I don't have the capacity to have HR at the moment. I'm planning to grow my business in the future, and I want to build a relationship and hopefully have a partnership in the future. Can we meet? At that point, you can meet with the HR professional, talk about your business, talk about your values. What type of culture do you want to create? And also ask questions to this person and see if there's a match. Like I mentioned about my husband and myself, we both HR, but we do HR totally different. So you have to find someone that is actually a person that is going to match the culture you're trying to create in your business. Once you find that person, then you're going to cultivate that relationship. You're going to send that person updates, maybe like every 6 months, a little update, like, I don't know, maybe for the 4th of July, you say, happy 4th of July. I hope you're having a great summer. I just wanted to give you a quick update about my business. 2 months ago, we purchased a van and we purchased new printer. So now we're printing in-house, and also we're doing installation as well. Now my team went from 5 to 20. So that way the person knows what is happening with your business. And then when you're ready to move on and have a partnership, or maybe you have an issue and you need HR, you're going to reach out to this person, and that relationship is going to feel so natural because you're no longer working with someone that you haven't seen. You actually met this person and you have done the work to keep this person up to date about your organization. So the person know what type of business you have. They know where you are, and they'll be able to provide the support that you need. So that's what I would say. The best advice I can give you is that if you have a business you're growing or planning to grow, think about HR and think about it now.
All right. And last but not least, since you're very passionate about this subject, what do you love most about what you do?
Oh, wow. So I love HR because I love how the reason why I started doing HR was because I was a recruiter. I was placing people to work. And then I realized that once they got to work, I had no influence of their work experience. They would come to me, talk to me how they were not treated well at work, they were not trained properly, they were fired with no reasons. And I wanted to get involved on those things. I wanted to be their voice. So I decided to get into HR so I could see the entire employee experience. And that's exactly what I do now. One of the things that makes me feel more proud of my work is when I see someone entering the organization as a low level, maybe, minimum wage employee that just graduated high school, and then see that person moving up because we're providing the support for that person to be able to develop, to get new skills. And then you see that person moving to be a supervisor. And then you see them moving to be a manager and a director. And then when I see people moving that way, it makes me, you know, this is the reason why I do what I do, to be able to support employees in a way they can develop and grow inside the organization.
I love it. That's really good. Well, Vidalcia, you have been great today. This is such a good episode and so needed. And you've spent a good amount of time with us. This episode's a little longer than normal, but so worth it. So, and we will make sure in the show notes to put all of your contact information if people have questions or want to work with you. So we'll make sure that all that is there for you as well. So
nice. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Well, we'll see you. We'll talk to you again soon. Well, hey, Behind the Science community, we'll see you later.